Barcelona. As soon as she returned from the moon, Gilda Nordquist went straight to the satellite monitoring center in the underground communications complex. "I might as well still be at Cellini," she said to herself as she strode through the windowless corridors, stopping only to peer into the scanners at every security door that checked her retinal pattern. None of the men or women walking along the corridors recognized her. "Good," she thought. "But once I'm head of the security division, they'll get acquainted with my face." Then she thought, "Or maybe I should remain anonymous, unknown, keep everyone guessing." The same overweight, jowly man was sitting at the center of the insect-eye set of display screens. His shirt looked wrinkled, sweaty, as if he'd slept in it. "Does he ever leave this room?" Nordquist wondered. "What have you found out about Jordan Kell?" she asked, without any polite preliminaries.
"He's on the reservation, all right," the unkempt man said. "They're keeping him indoors as much as possible, but I've got a good track on him and his accomplice, Paul Longyear. Whenever they step out into the open, one of our satellites pings me."
"He's still there, then?"
"They both are."
"Good. If he moves off the reservation, inform me immediately."
"You and the 7th Cavalry."
"What?"
The man chuckled softly. "Nothing. A little joke, that's all."
"This isn't funny. It's very important. Top priority."
"A memo to that effect would help me explain the costs I'm running up for you."
"You'll get it before the day's over."
Nordquist left the pudgy little man sitting amidst his display screens and headed for Anita Halleck's office. Jordan Kell was impressed with the hospitality that Paul Longyear and his people had shown him. They had put him up in a comfortable bedroom in the ranch-style home of Paul's parents, both of them teachers at the local high school. The bedroom had been Paul's when he was growing up. Now he had a small home of his own less than a kilometer away, but Jordan recognized the university banner still tacked to the wall over the narrow bed, and the digital reader that lay on the bureau where Paul had left it. He glanced at his watch. Too early for Aditi to call, he knew. She usually calls well after dinner time. Still, he wondered how she was, what she was doing, what Halleck's minions, especially that oily Castiglione, were doing with her.
"Dinner's ready," called Mrs. Longyear from the kitchen.
Jordan walked down the short corridor that led to the dining room. Paul's father was already seated at the head of the table. Mrs. Longyear was depositing a steaming platter of roast chicken in front of him. Quanah Longyear was a good-natured man approaching his 5th retirement opportunity. He had spent his adult life teaching Native American children the history of their ancestors, alongside the history of the nation that surrounded them. His hair was silver, his smile cheery. He had none of the suspicious, uneasy attitude that his son carried around with him. Mrs. Longyear, Carolyn, was a mixture of Irish and Native American, fair skin, graying hair, warmly gracious. As he took the chair opposite Mrs. Longyear, Jordan said to them, "It's awfully good of you to take me in like this."
"It's no imposition," said Mrs. Longyear. "We're glad to do it. We don't get many visitors from outside the reservation, you know."
Her husband nodded agreement as he passed the platter of chicken to Jordan.
"Paul says you're in some trouble with the World Council."
"I'm afraid they want to keep me in custody," Jordan said, putting the platter down and picking a thigh. The food smelled delicious with a hint of tangy spice.
"Why is that?" Longyear asked.
"They don't want me to talk to the news media."
"Why is that?"
As he handed the platter to Mrs. Longyear, Jordan answered, "I want the council to start working now on the problem of the death wave."
"Death wave?" Mrs. Longyear blurted.
So Jordan spent most of the dinner explaining what he had learned on New Earth and how the World Council was putting off the decisions it had to make.
"So that's why we've had drones flying over the reservation," said Longyear.
"I'm afraid it's because of me, yes."
"And Paul's involved in this?" his wife asked, looking alarmed for the first time.
"Peripherally. It's really me they're after."
"Tribal councils complained to the federal government about those drones. They've entered our airspace without permission."
Longyear's easy smile had morphed into a troubled frown. Mrs. Longyear looked anxious, too.
"You mean that there are whole civilizations on other worlds that might be wiped out? Extinguished?
If we don't help them, yes."
"And this death wave is heading our way?" Longyear asked.
It will be here in 2,000 years.
That's a long time.
I know, Jordan conceded. But we should start preparing for it now, don't you think?
Longyear pursed his lips. No sense waiting until the last minute, I suppose, but 2,000 years?
Mrs. Longyear asked.
Those other people on their own planets, the death wave will hit them a lot sooner, you say?
Yes. We barely have enough time to reach them, even if we start right now.
We ought to help them, she said.
I agree, said Jordan.
So do I, Longyear said. But there's not much we can do if the World Council doesn't want to act.
There's something I can do, Jordan said. Then he added, perhaps.
Mrs. Longyear said, helping those people would be the right thing to do.
Longyear nodded agreement, but said,
well, right now the best thing we can do is dig into our dinner before it gets cold.